Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, welcome back, super friends, to our little podcast, We Get It, You Superman, an episode-by-episode Smallville podcast. I'm your host, James, with my other host,
Robin!
And we're here to talk about episode 3 of season 1, Hothead, original air dates. I wish everything on IMDb was on one page. October 30th, 2001. This episode, written by Greg Walker. The previous were written by showrunners Alfred Goh and Miles Millar. And I just have one question for you for this episode, Robin.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for some football?
No.
Too bad. This game opens with football.
Wait. I didn't want to interrupt your opening description thing, but I would like to introduce a new metric where I try to guess what the supervillain is.
Uh-huh.
And I'm guessing it's some sort of either fire guy or someone who like really likes those red hot warheads. Yeah, the cinnamon ones? Those exist.
Yeah. Well, I'm not giving you credit for guessing the fire guy when you've got two guesses in there.
Well, I mean, I was guessing fire guy, but then I at the last second remembered that it might be funnier if I thought of something ridiculous.
Oh, I see. You're a funny person, Robin. But strangely enough, instead of fire, this episode starts in the rain, where the football team is in some, you know, big football game, small town football. And like the coach is angry at the quarterback, our friend Whitney. This coach is his full name. Let me look it up. He's just called Coach most of the episode. Coach Walt Arnold, and he's played by Dan Lauria, who you might remember as the dad from Happy Days.
I don't. What was Happy Days?
You know, it's the one where it has that kid who was in that Nintendo movie.
I think you're thinking of The Wonder Years.
Oh, what did I say?
Happy Days.
Oh, sorry. No, he's the dad from The Wonder Years.
Okay. And it still doesn't help me because I don't remember what anyone aside from the main Wonder Years kid looked like, but I'll pretend.
He looks like an American Alfred Molina.
Okay. Happy Days was that show with the Fonz.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
And just looking over his IMDb profile, he has a lot of roles in just one episode, roles as a coach, so he must be good at it.
Are you sure he's not the dad from Coach?
Yes. Well, actually, I don't know. I'm not gonna look. So he's like, I'm the coach, go run this play. And he does, and they win the game against the Fairfield Timberwolves? You only see the thought. It's not like the Gotham Bats or something. That wouldn't make any sense.
The Metropolis Maneaters. And they're all playing that song, Maneater.
The feminist football team. Maybe? Well, they're trying. They're trying. At least it's something.
Watch out, boys. They'll chew you up.
So, you know, the victorious team goes back into the locker room. They're the Crows, so the coach says, once again, another team is eating crow, which is kind of a weird, like, we won phrase.
Yeah, it's like a weird sex thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, the next game, if they win it, they get to go to state, and also, it'll be Coach Walt's 200th win.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's good. But if they lose, then just the next win will be his 200th win, right?
You may think that. But, well, first we have to cut to the coach's private sauna, provided by the Alumni Association instead of, like, textbooks.
Is this in college or...
No, this is high school football.
And high school Alumni Association, huh?
I don't know much about high school, like, where we grew up. We both went to nerd high school. It didn't even have, like, any sports teams. But in, like, middle America in 2000, you could have, like, a professional football stadium welded onto your high school for high school football.
That's a good point.
So this isn't strangely too far out of the ordinary.
At our school, if you wanted to play sports, you had to take a bus to your zone school after class.
Yeah. Did anyone do that?
I knew a couple people who did that.
Oh.
One of them started the Dance Dance Revolution Club at our school. So that's the kind of school we were at.
So, what is unusual is the rocks he's heating up and using to create the steam in his steam sauna.
Are they glowing green?
Why, yes, they are. And the camera makes sure to zoom in and see them glowing green while making the warm sound. Because as you know, the audience doesn't really understand what these meteor rocks do or are unless you make it really explicit.
Right. Question.
Yeah.
Do we get the sense that the coach has been, like, using these meteor rocks for a long time as in his sauna? Or, like, this is a new thing for him, like, oh, I got some green rocks, really punch up the sauna atmosphere. Or did they come from the Alumni Association?
I don't know. I didn't think about it. I'd assume if he was going on for a while, he would have, like, demonstrated his fire starting powers earlier.
He's got fire starting powers?
Well, you already guessed that.
Oh, right.
Where do you get rocks for your sauna? Do you just, like, go out and, like, pick some up? Or does the service, like, deliver them?
Yeah, I think you have to order them from some kind of rock supplier. I always thought it was, like, smooth river rocks. So, I don't... Also, glowing green usually in fiction or in any kind of context, to me, would sound like... would mean, like, radiation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'd want to lock myself in a hot, steamy room with a bunch of radioactive rocks.
Well, kryptonite is radioactive, but it's radiation that only hurts Superman, at least in the comics. In this series, it also gives people weird powers.
What kind of radiation does it emit? Is it a special... because I know there's alpha, beta, and gamma radiation.
It's some weird space radiation. It's like, it's got elements in it that aren't even on the periodic scale. Which doesn't make sense, but... whatever.
Alpha radiation, I remember this. I'm gonna talk over you and teach the world about alpha radiation. So okay. Alpha radiation is, like, the weakest one, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, it can be stopped by your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be around alpha radiation, no problem.
Yeah.
Beta radiation, is it beta? I think it's beta. Is a little bit stronger, but it can be stopped by clothing. And then gamma radiation, that's gonna fuck you up. There's nothing stopping that shit.
Yep.
And so our teacher demonstrated it to us by saying, you have three cookies, one of them emits alpha radiation, one is beta, and one is gamma, and you can eat one, hold one, and put one in your pocket. How do you do it?
Well, isn't the gamma cookie going to kill you no matter what?
Yes.
Okay. Are you actually
asking
me?
It'll give you a dose of gamma radiation. You don't know if that'll kill you. It could turn you into Mr. Fantastic.
You're thinking of the Hulk. The Hulk was gamma radiation. The Fantastic Four was cosmic radiation. Get it together, Robin.
Oh, that's probably what kryptonite... I almost said Candrona. That's probably what kryptonite does, is cosmic radiation.
Be sure to check out Robin's book-by-book Animorphs podcast, by the way. It's pretty awesome.
It always comes out on time. It doesn't. I'm sorry.
So... hold on, one more sauna-related tangent before we go on. But, like, how often do you think you have to get new sauna rocks?
Yeah, I don't think they go bad.
Right.
Like, also, you never answered my question about the radioactive cookies.
Oh, sorry. Okay, eat the alpha, hold the beta, put the gamma in your pocket.
Wrong. What? That's what everyone picked. But here's the thing.
It's a trick question.
The gamma radiation's going to get you no matter what, so you might as well eat that one.
Oh, die quicker?
Well, no, I mean, you'll get the same amount of radiation no matter where you put that. The beta you can put in your pocket because your clothes will block it. The alpha you can hold. So to get the least amount of radiation, that's what you got to do, is eat the gamma and then just put the other two where they won't hurt you.
Wait, is gamma radiation just more penetrative or is it, like, more dangerous?
That's a good question.
I thought radiation's whole thing was
distinguished between them.
It's like it, like, goes through you and, like, screws up your DNA.
Yeah, and it turns you into the Hulk.
Yeah. Okay. So he's enjoying a nice private steam at the alumni association's expense, And who should come in and talk to him but the principal, Principal Kwan, played by Hiro Kanagawa. And there's a problem, Robin. A football problem.
Not a football problem. That's the worst kind of problem.
There's evidence that 7 players on the football team cheated on their math midterms. And they're going to have to take them out of the game. The game that's going to be Coach Walt's 200th win and get them to state.
No! Doesn't the principal understand that football is more important than math?
The principal's only been here 6 months. The coach has been here 25 years. This is his legacy.
He already did get like a free sauna out of it, so maybe his legacy is done. That's how I see it.
Once you get someone to buy you a private sauna, I think your legacy's pretty well cemented.
Yeah.
And he gets angry and slams on the table, which immediately bursts into flames. And in the first of many times in this episode, no fire alarms go off. Basically, Smallville High is a death trap.
Mm. Hey, was one of the people who cheated Whitney?
No.
Aw, damn.
So anyway, we cut to the school the next day. It's a bright, sunny day, but that's not what the soundtrack is telling us. The soundtrack is actually telling us that we're not happy. We're feeling bad. We have sunshine in a bag.
James, that sounds like the lyrics to a popular good song that I like.
How about that?
It's called 19-2000. No, wait. Sorry, keep going.
Chloe has written some story about the headline is like game or abuse for football. So either she is way ahead of the whole concussion thing than the rest, or it's the coach's long history of like beating up his players and whatnot. He's not a cool person. And also, I think she's really reaching after trying to top the Pulitzer Prize she won last week for, you know, figuring out Bug Boy. Finally entombed mother. I mean, it was every national newspaper.
Wait, did she really win a Pulitzer for it?
She should have. No, she didn't. But seriously, where's the Pulitzer?
I don't think they give that to high school newspaper reporters. No. That's the only thing.
See, sometimes small papers like break something big and get the Pulitzer. I assume if you broke something big enough in a student newspaper, you could still get it.
I mean, you send it to the Associated Press and let them, like, reprint it in the big papers, and then your byline's still on it.
I don't know how the news industry works. Nobody does.
Nobody does.
What's the news anyway? Nobody knows.
But I know what the Associated Press is.
What is the Associated Press? Is that just all the press?
Yeah, they send out stuff.
It's not like the NY Times. It's not like its own paper. It's just...
No, they, like... syndicate things? I don't know. If you're a reporter and you're listening to this, let us know, but like nicely. Not in like a you idiot jerks kind of way.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Also,
I pretend to know, but I don't.
It's kind of weird in this series that Chloe's the one into journalism and Clark like isn't interested at all considering his future career.
Yeah. But maybe she's the one who gets him into it.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's busy, like, running around and, being super. Well, man.
Anyhow, in a scene I really like, and I actually remember from watching, God, like, 20 years ago, she's taking photos of the football team. One of them's like, ooh, I don't like you, and just, like, you know, throws a bullet football at her. And right before it hits, Clark reaches out and catches it one-handed, then throws it back so hard, like, it hits the guy that's something, like, doubles over and falls down. And the coach sees this. He's like, I wonder if his skills at football would carry over to the game of football. He follows him into the school and says, hey, Clark, you got a good arm, you know, you should be on the football team. And he says, oh, well, I gotta help my dad. It's like, your dad was a great football player. It's in the genes. And Clark says, actually, I was adopted. And for credit to the coach, he does the... But then he moves past it. He says, hey, Whitney, come here. How do you think Clark would do on the team? And it's like, he'd do okay. But I think he's scared. And Lana says, like, Clark, that's not it, is it? It's like, no.
Oh my God.
It's like, look, Clark, you gotta be your own man and do what I say. He sounds like a bit my Dan Lauria voice is a bit of a smooth Gilbert Gottfried.
It's good. I like it. I'm into it.
So Clark says, all right, you know, sign me up. But as you remember from the first episode, his dad doesn't want Clark playing football for a lot of very good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile...
because footballs are the only thing that sap his powers.
Yeah.
No, wait.
Meanwhile, Lana is kind of like, she's mad at Whitney again because of those cheaters and everything. And Whitney's, you know, he doesn't really care that his friends cheated. And she's like, but it's cheating. Cheating's bad. And yeah. I don't know. If I had a friend who cheated on a math test, like, I wouldn't disown him or anything. I'd be like,
yeah, huh. I don't know. I think I'd probably be upset about it. But there is something to be said for, like, if you're not good at math, but you are good at sports, and then you get kicked off the sports team for being bad at math, that seems like, if that's supposed to be your career afterwards, like, in these small towns where, like, going into football is, like, the thing to do,
mm-hmm.
I get it. But then at the same time, if you're playing too much football to ever study math, then that's, like, shitty for your mental development.
Yeah.
I've got no strong opinion one way or the other. But cheating is bad.
Cheating is bad. Don't cheat, kids.
Yeah.
So Clark goes back to the farm to talk with his dad. And, you know, his dad says you could very easily, you know, in the heat of the moment, hurt one of the other kids. And he doesn't go into the argument that's, you know, the sportsmanship argument of, Clark, you're already the greatest football player on earth. You could stack every NFL team, like, against you and you just rush through them. Like...
yeah.
You're just that's out the there like you're playing peewee football and pretending like when the players like try to tackle you, they like might have a chance of doing it.
But James, what's the point of being the greatest football player in the world if no one knows?
I don't know. You would know. Wouldn't that be enough?
No. Lana Lang has to know.
Yeah, that's Clark's basic argument, but he really does want to play football, and I mean, as a, you know, small town high school kid, it comes through, right? Like, football is meaningful to him, and he eventually says, look, I'm playing football and you can't stop me.
Mm.
Which is terrifying if you parse that logic out to other things he might want to do. Because, yeah. I mean, we
look,
can't.
I'm killing this guy and you can't stop me. Stop trying to run my life.
I'm robbing this bank and you can't stop me. So, let's check in at the X-Mansion with Lex Luthor.
Wait, Lex Luthor's at the X-Mansion? Are you sure it's not the Lex Mansion?
Oh, yeah, that's much better. I said this in the first episode, it looks just like the like X-Mansion. Nice kind of brickwork... I describe it more, but I don't know how to describe, like, houses. I'm a man.
It's mansion-y.
Yeah.
Wait, did you just say something sexist, but Discord cut it off? All I heard was, I'm a man.
I said, I don't know how to describe houses. I'm a man.
Oh, yeah. That's sexist.
Yeah, but it's, like, fun sexist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes it better.
Lex is talking to, like, three agents of his father, like, lawyers. And they said, as you know, Lex, at the fertilizer plants... this isn't what they actually sound like. I'm just doing a voice here. Projections are down 20%. Thus, you have to fire 20% of your workforce. Which... I don't think quite adds up, but okay.
Wait, they're producing less, so he needs to fire them so that it's harder on the ones remaining?
Well, no, just the whole, like, profits are 20% below projections, so you have to fire 20% of your workforce. Like, profit percentage points and workforce percentage points aren't a one-to-one ratio.
Got it. I think you said projections, but what I heard was production.
Ah.
So I got confused.
It's one of the P words. I don't know.
Yeah. No, projection makes more sense.
But Lex says, actually, I'm going to hire 20% more people. When the market comes back, you know, we'll be ahead of the curve. Now go tell my dad I said that. It's like, oh, and Duncan, say hi to your sister for me. And Duncan's like, sure, Lex.
Creepy.
Yeah, we'll get a bit more into Lex. This is the first time he's been written by a different writer, and I think he's a little worse for wear for it. So
also, Lex doesn't understand that we're about to go into a recession, huh?
Well, it's still... This is 2001?
When was the recession? 07?
It was 08.
08?
Yeah, the 10th anniversary is recent. No one's in prison.
Oh, great.
Yep. So, we cut to the first football game, or football practice, that is. Clark is, you know, comes onto the field, and his dad's in the stands, and he says to him, hey, Dad, I know, even though you disagreed, I really want you to know how much it means to me that you came, you know, watch me play. And his dad says, I'm here to make sure no one gets hurt, son. Which is, he's a little dickish about it, because, I mean, I'm with him on the whole you might kill people thing. But
right.
Tom Welling is just so, like, earnest. He's, just throw him a bone, Jonathan.
Also, like, what's he gonna do to stop people from getting hurt if Clark tries to hurt him?
Maybe he knows CPR.
I'm sure lots of people there know CPR.
You're right. He doesn't really have a purpose in this scene.
What I'm saying, like, how's he gonna stop Clark? Do they have a safe word that, like, will deactivate him?
We had a psychologist plant a post-hypnotic suggestion that'll instantly make you fall asleep. We had a duty to the human race, son.
I hope you understand.
As long as no one says the nonsense phrase, amazing world of gumball, you'll be fine.
He's got a speakerphone, or like a, what are those called? A loudspeaker. Not a speakerphone. A loudspeaker, just ready to shout it if he has to.
So Clark gets into the defensive line, and some guys tackle him, and the coach is like, "Grr, get up! Get angry, Clark!" So he just, some like rock music starts playing with nothing you ever heard of, and he just like smashes through three guys and like shoulders another guy so hard, he basically like backflips and lands on his stomach and like runs to the end zone. It's like, and the coach is like, wow, that's basically the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of broken ribs.
And his dad's like, I disapprove, and leaves. And Clark's like, aw.
His dad, the football player, is like, I've never been so disappointed in my son.
Yeah, pretty much. But he's like, hey, where's Lana? Didn't she see me do that sick move that put at least four people in traction? But Lana's actually quit cheerleading. She wants to try something new.
Is it, like, Glee Club?
We'll find out soon.
Oh, okay.
It's not that amazing.
Is it reporting?
No. Lana Lang never became a reporter. You're thinking of Lois Lane.
I mean...
The Lana Lang of Metropolis.
Yeah, I remember there's an episode later on where Lois Lane comes to Smallville.
Oh. Honey, you have no idea who comes to Smallville. There's
I know,
10 seasons.
James Marsters comes in as Brainiac at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I think I watched that episode, like, it was maybe like a 3-episode run, but I watched at least one of them and realized just how short James Marsters is compared to Tom Welling.
Yeah, I think that's in season 5, because Clark is going to Smallville University.
Yeah, he's like 5'10" and has brown hair, and I'm like, not my Spike! I was into Buffy.
Hashtag not my Spike.
Yeah.
So, cut back to the coach's office. He's watching video of Clark doing that amazing run. He's like, man, I'm going to win so many football games. And Principal Kwan comes in and says, one of these 7 cheaters has come forward and said you supplied him with the midterm.
Uh-oh.
Clark's like, no, I didn't. But I bet you went to the school board. They wouldn't shut me down. Heh, I know them all. I coached most of them. And Kwan's like,
snap.
Yeah, but if I get all 7 to come forward, you'll be suspended from coaching for life. And he goes,
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, you're not standing away. My legs. He goes, blah. And the TV catches on fire and no fire alarms go off. And the principal's like, what the hell? He's like, what's going on? And just kind of leaves.
So the principal didn't react, didn't really have any kind of reaction either of the times that the coach slammed his hands down and lit something on fire?
Yeah, I didn't see the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's walking back to his car and the coach is looking out the window and he's like, oh, I can set things on fire. And he sets the car on fire. And as Clark's, you know, walking out, he sees it and he runs over and drags the principal out right before the car explodes, making this the third car rescue in 3 episodes.
Well, yeah, that's his thing.
I guess car rescues might be like a cheap way to show super strength or something.
James, if he doesn't rescue someone from a car, he can't finish the episode. Sorry, I had to take a drink of water there in the middle of my sentence.
Oh. Yeah, that's reasonable. Back at the Kent farm, it turns out the principal's going to be okay. He has to spend the weekend in the hospital. And, you know, his dad's like, Clark's dad, well, his dad, not the coach's dad.
Uh-huh.
The dad says, so you really could have easily hurt people out there, Clark. And Clark says, yeah, but I didn't, see? You don't trust me, even though I'm worthy of trust. It's like, hey, by the way, the coach made me tailback your old position. Well, don't everyone congratulate me at once. And, you know, dad's like, you were put here for better things than football. Oh, how did he get so stubborn? And the mom's like, yeah, don't know anyone like that who at his age ran away for a summer to try out for the Metropolis Sharks.
It was his dad.
Like, sports teams, I don't think professional football teams have, like, open tryouts, especially not for high school students. They draft college players mostly, right?
We would need to get an expert on this episode before, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I believe you. Like, that would make more sense to me for them to, you know, draft people, but maybe they just need one or two more people and they're like, eh, we can have anyone, really.
Not a single good college student left in America.
They can't all be Colin Kaepernicks.
The gang, by which I mean Pete, Chloe, and Clark, go to the trendy Smallville hangout, the Talon, where it turns out Chloe is working as a waitress.
Oh. Wait, Chloe or Lana?
Oh, Lana, sorry.
That makes more sense. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah, sorry. And Lana's really bad at the job. Like, she forgets to bring dishes in. And at one point, someone runs into her and she drops all the drinks she was carrying. And everyone does the whole, you know, applause thing. But someone ran into her. That one seemed pretty unfair.
Yeah.
Chloe's like, man, Clark Kent's on the football team and Lana Lang is a waitress? How bizarre.
Well, it's like all of our preconceived notions about what high school stereotypes should do have been shattered.
Mm-hmm. Lana tells Clark, you know, the things that I thought were true kind of are, and I want to try some new stuff. And Clark's like, yeah, I get it. And you're also handling the trauma from being kidnapped by that bug boy last week really well. But yeah, still get the flashbacks. One of the football players comes in. They're all wearing their Letterman jackets all the time, so you can tell. Says, mm-hmm. Yo, coach, you have to see us on the field. And Chloe's like, I smell a scoop. So she follows them. And before they leave the Talon, they all just order, like, black coffee. So I think writers at this point knew, like, teenagers were starting to go to coffee shops, but didn't realize what kind of coffee they were drinking.
That makes sense.
Hmm. So, go on.
It's really awesome that, like, Chloe happens to be writing about football on the episode where the bad guy is a football guy.
Mm-hmm. That is convenience.
Clark should start reading Chloe's newspaper more.
Yeah, you know what? She's kind of the brains of this operation.
Yeah, she's sort of a divining rod for weird shit.
Mm-hmm. So she follows
him. Dowsing rod. Sorry. Dowsing rod.
I don't know the difference.
I don't think divining rod's an actual thing.
Well, I mean, it's like a a fictional thing, right?
Yeah.
Huh. Anyhow, so she falls into the football field where they're all, like, just standing under the sprinklers, the coach and the seven people who, you know, cheated. Like, I never thought you'd be this stupid. And one of the guys says, hey, if cheating was on our record, we'd never get into college. Like, so was you. I forgot the kid's name. Watson.
Good.
And he, like, you know, gets angry, and the sprinkler streams catch fire. Ooh. Which is a cool effect, but he set water on fire. And this was back before that was commonplace. Yeah. In the previous episode, Jonathan Kent was like, oh, blame the fertilizer plant. Who knows what kind of stuff they're dumping into the water supply. And you know what? He might have a point. And Chloe sees this and goes, holy crap, second Pulitzer, here I come, and takes a bunch of pictures.
Yeah, by the end of this series, Chloe has won 700 Pulitzers.
Mm-hmm. So we cut back to the Lex Mansion, where we get Lionel Luther back for the first time since the pilot, and the first time I think he's appeared in scene with Michael Rosenbaum's Lex Luthor. He says, Lex, I told you to cut 20%. And Lex is like, no, you sent me to a crap factory in Smallville. The son, the Caesars used to send their sons out to the furthest reaches of the empire. Blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm. Just
tell you what, I'll fence you for it. If I win, you cut by 20%. If you win, we'll go with your plan.
If you win, best 2 out of 3.
So they're in their white fencing uniforms. They're not wearing the masks, though, because otherwise it'd be safe and we wouldn't be able to see where they are. And they're not like, I actually, before grad school work, drowned any notion of me joining any kind of extracurricular organization. Went to a few sessions of fencing club.
Oh.
Fencing is done, like, on a special mat, right? You just go forward and back. And if you're pushed back far enough, that's one of the ways you can lose. But they're just fencing in the den, and, like, Lionel's, like, rolling across the pool table and stuff. It's much better fencing. Anyhow, Lionel wins and says, I want those people gone by tomorrow, Lex. And leaves. And Lex is like, damn.
If only I was better at fencing, I could have kept those workers.
Why didn't I just shoot him?
To the financial detriment of the company. Wait, did he say why didn't I just shoot him?
No. Cut to Clark's loft, where he's, you know, he has his jersey on. He's getting ready for the, what do you call it? Pep rally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For the game. And his mom's like, oh, you look as handsome as your father. Says, you don't got to play peacekeeper, Mom. She says, no, I think, you know, I want to trust you, but it's not like you're entirely blameless. You're a teenager with godlike powers. We're a little bit worried, Clark.
This is a good question. Does Clark have regular teenager hormones? Sorry, I shouldn't say human teenager hormones.
He seems like a normal teenager so far. I think in a future episode, his, like, heat vision is tied to his teenage libido some way, because it's, like, hot.
Nice. And
that's not in the comics. He's never been like, I have to watch porn to defeat this villain.
Hang on, Ice Monster. Let me just watch a couple of minutes of this porno, and then I'll be right back to kick your ass.
Like that.
Actually, I remember
that
issue, because then the ice monster was like, what kind of porn? And he was like, oh, you want to watch? And then they just chilled and, like, became friends, watching porn together. You know how you always watch porn with friends?
Like, I have never watched porn with friends and never will.
It's the only way to watch porn. You just all get on the couch together, everyone takes their pants off, and you just sort of, like, look straight ahead at the
straight ahead.
It's a circle of trust, James. Everyone knows this.
Yeah, you think that bit in Batman vs. Superman where, like, he's doing the competing, like, Kamehameha, like, laser dueling with, with Doomsday? It's like, boobs, 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 boobs. Yes. You think of a second win when Wonder Woman showed up.
There you go. Actually, you don't know this, but at that time, Lois Lane had just sent him a sexy selfie.
Ooh. Chloe's up in the office on her 2000 era iMac. Remember they had like they were all one monitor and had like kind of the blue or purple, like the candy colored monitors.
Yeah, we had those in my Spanish class.
Yeah, they were cool. And she's writing up the articles like Field of Screams or Fear Fire Field. Damn it, there's no good field pun that works with a fire pun.
Wait, hang on. I may have gotten distracted. What happened after the coach set the sprinklers on fire? Did everyone just go home?
Yeah.
Did the guy die?
Who?
The one who the coach was like,
Oh
I knew you were the
no.
one who came forward.
No, you just said, yeah, keep your mouth shut. And I should mention previously, Chloe meets that guy, or she's like, you know, like a secret, like Woodward and Bernstein thing for the school paper.
Of course.
And says, yo, you know, this photo's going on the front page tomorrow, so you can, you know, spill your guts now or spill them later. And the football player, Watson, we've named him, remember, is walking back to his car, and the coach grabs him, and he's like burning his arm with his hand. So he has fire starting powers and like hot hand powers.
Okay.
Hey, we're talking to that reporter. Said, no, she has a picture of us. Okay, I'll take care of it. You go home. So, Chloe.
No, I was asking around on a date. This is high school. Stop being so paranoid.
Chloe's working on her, second Pulitzer report about new magic powers, and the coach is outside, and he, you know, does his thing, so the computer lights on fire. It's like, oh, and she runs for the door, and that light's on fire. She runs for the other door, and that light's on fire. And again, no fire alarms going off.
Nah.
This school is not up to code. Maybe instead of spending that money on the private sauna, they could have done that.
Well, James, they packed the ceiling with asbestos to keep it fireproof. I don't know what else you want from them.
So Chloe like leans out the window, is like, "Hey, help!" And Clark sees her and super runs over and like kicks in the door. And the coach is like, "What?" And the fire stops. And he says, "Thank God I saved you." I don't think the coach sees Clark do anything super. He just like sees him when he kicks open the door.
Did
So
the coach see? Where was the coach in relation to the fire?
it's unclear. He's like outside a fire door looking in, but it seems like the office of the paper, which is called The Torch, by the way,
Of course.
like isn't near those fire doors. So
Huh.
like the fire was following her, so I'd like to think he had some kind of line of sight going, but maybe he can just like say,
I
okay,
mean, what I'm
fire.
wondering is if he can see through the fire. Like, if the fire is his eyes.
Yeah, or maybe it's like the fire's like kind of alive, like, okay, fire, you go in there, you burn the files first, then get the doors so she can't escape, then kind of circle in on her.
Then you come back to me, we watch some porn together, and then everything is hunky-dory.
Fire's like, you've got it, coach, but let's make this quick. I have to burn down an orphanage later.
Beautiful. I love the fire voice.
I assume all fires are just this one fire.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So Clark does make the joke, huh? The torch torched. Ha ha ha. And Chloe's like, thanks, Clark. I almost died.
Thanks, Clark. I'm dying of smoke inhalation. Can you get me to the hospital?
Of course, all her files were on that computer, this being
Of course.
2001. And her 2001 camera also got burned up. So all the evidence, except for all the other evidence, has been destroyed. And they'll never bring Dan Lauria to justice.
But Clark is an eyewitness, right?
That a fire started, and he's really dismissive of this theory. Chloe's like, I saw him start fires with his mind, and then this weird fire that doesn't occur in natural law torched me when I was about to report on something that would reflect poorly on him. It's like, oh, come on, Lana. Stop reading
Chloe.
comic books, Chloe. Sorry. They're different people. They are distinctly different people. I don't know how I keep screwing this up.
Yeah, one has an alliterative name and one is a reporter.
Well, Chloe says, Watson wouldn't talk to me, but I know he knows something. Maybe he'll talk to you. So Clark goes down to Watson's house. He's like in his garage and he's just like kind of curled up into a ball, like surrounded by fire extinguishers. And it's actually a pretty dark scene. He's like, he's really fucked up by all this fire stuff.
I mean, I would be too.
He's like, no one can do anything. He'll, you know, roast me if I say anything. And Clark's like, I got this. But first, we gotta go back to the Talon for more coffee. Lex Luthor's there. He's like going through files and he says, you know, Clark says, hey, what you doing? He says, I'm trying to figure out which poor bastards are gonna get the axe. And like I said, this episode's Lex Luthor is subtly different from the last two. The last two was very much like, he does good things kind of instrumentally and through like kind of supervillain-esque plotting, but this guy actually seems to care about his workers. And Clark's like, yeah, my dad should be proud, but he wanted, but you know, I'm playing football, my dad's not proud, but I did it anyway. And Lana's like, hey, my aunt didn't want me to quit cheerleading, but I did it anyway. And Lex is like, you know what, I'm inspired by you. I'll figure something out. And Lana says, oh, here's your coffee. He says, thanks. And he drinks it. And Clark says, is that what you ordered? And he says, not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute.
But now we cut to the day of the big game.
The big game?
Yup.
Coach the one Walt's that if they 200th... win it, they'll go to state?
And Coach Walt will have his 200th win.
That's exciting.
Clark confronts the coach in the only possible place the coach could have an advantage, in his private sauna.
Ew.
The coach says, Clark, why aren't you suiting up for the game? And Clark, he sees the kryptonite rocks, and he sees his hand doing the whole, like, veiny I'm hurt thing with the sound effects. And what he should do is, like, take 8 steps back, wait for him to come out of the sauna, and then confront him. But he's like, ugh, I spoke to Watson. I know what you did, and I'm going to stop you. The coach's like, no, you're not. What's the matter, Clark? You can't stand the heat? And he, like, punches him and, like, throws him over the sauna rocks. They all scatter. He's like, now, if you'll excuse me, I got a game to win. And locks him in the sauna. It's very convoluted, but now Clark's in the kryptonite sauna, and the coach is going to go play football.
But doesn't he need Clark to win?
I mean, he still has those 7 other players.
Oh, okay, so they haven't been, like, kicked out.
Yeah, no, they haven't been
yet.
Kicked out yet.
Seems like it'd be pretty easy just to kick him after the game, then. I don't know why the principal was so up in arms about it.
Yeah, no, the principal was very much like, no, we have to deal with this now. We cannot wait 3 days for this game to be over first. Like, even me, I'm pretty much like, you know, football, whatever. I'm all about academics. But if this was his coach's, like, 25th anniversary, 200th game, I'll give him 3 days, right?
Well, maybe.
Like, small-town America will understand.
Yeah, small-town football lovers will forgive a lot. Not necessarily for a good reason.
I didn't say it'd be for a good reason, I just say it'd be fine.
Yeah.
Principal Quan will be fine, don't worry. He's gonna see a lot of shit before this series is through. A lot of his kids become kryptonite supervillains.
By season 10, there's no one left at the school.
It's like the school from the bad universe in Buffy.
Exactly.
So the Kents have decided to come to the game. His dad's kind of coming around. He's like, hey, where's Clark? And Chloe's like, I don't know. He was supposed to meet me earlier. And John's like, okay, let's go look for him. I'll look in the locker room. And the coach is like, looks at him looking. He's like, I'll be back in 5 minutes. I gotta go do something. It's like, we're in the middle of the game. It's like, just call the plays. I'll be right back. Clark's in the sauna room and he has these kryptonite rocks. And there's like one of those tiny little square windows. And he's like hucking the rocks at the window and eventually gets one through. And his dad sees it and kicks down the door and lets him out. But right then, Dan Loria comes up behind him and hits him in the back with a fire extinguisher. And he starts, like, kind of smacking Clark with it, too, while he's on the floor. But Clark's got his superpowers back. So he kicks him through a window, and he lands on one of those, like, locker room benches at a very bad angle. And this guy's, like, 55. It's like, I mean, he was the dad in the Wonder Years. I mean,
yeah,
take it a little easy, Clark.
I mean, he's trying to kill his dad.
Yeah. So the coach's like, oh yeah, well I. And he like sets the background behind Clark on fire and the foreground in front of him. And Clark just walks through it. How'd you do that? Clark's like, well, it's in the genes. Now I'm going to kick you in the uprights, through the uprights. I thought about that one for way too long.
To imagine that Clark says in the jeans, and then he points at his jeans, and there's a little tag that says flame retardant on them.
Oh.
It's in the jeans.
So he, like, smacks him another 20 feet into the showers, says, game over, coach, you lost. And the coach goes, rah! And all the showers turn on and catch fire and incinerate him. So.
Wow.
He really has three powers. Starting fires with his mind, hot hands, and turning showers on.
Yeah. The big three.
But to be fair, if you got powers from a radioactive sauna, control over showers does actually make a lot of sense.
It would make sense.
So that's pretty close to the end of the episode. You know, the fire department's there. Again, Clark and his dad just kind of walk away from this situation with no investigation. It's like, no one's figured anything out at the station. The coach just somehow incinerated himself in the shower.
High school, you know?
Yeah. And Clark is as okay with seeing a man incinerated in front of him as he was with seeing a childhood friend crushed to death in front of him in the first episode. He says to his dad, hey man, some of the things I said were out of line, and they reconcile. One more cut back to Lex Luthor. His dad storms back into the mansion, and he's angry again. He says, ah, what's this proposal you gave me, Lex? And Rosenbaum says, I found a way to cut the operating budget by 20% without firing a single worker. Because again, cutting the operating budget and cutting employee, like, again, it's not a 1-to-1% thing.
That's true. You don't cut 20% of your employees when you need to cut 20% of your budget.
Exactly. Bad move, Smallville. And this is where he says his...
They had to simplify it for people who didn't understand what kryptonite was.
This is where he says his famous line, Dad, you have no idea what I'm capable of.
But what did he do to cut the operating budget?
It doesn't matter. He just did it.
Are you sure? Because I thought he was going to, like, cut the CEO bonus or something.
It's never, like, explained in any way. Just that he found a clever way to operate as efficiently with less of a budget. His dad should be like, oh, wow, way to go, son. Sounds like you're really running the business well.
Yeah.
Like, cutting dad, 20%?
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But also, I imagine it's like, Dad, I found a way to cut our operating budget without eliminating a single worker. Instead of tennis balls, we're now making Pringles. Same cans, cheaper supplies. Mm. Let's go.
Remember that bit in The Office? Where Dwight's just like, as Lex Luthor said, Dad, you have no idea what I'm capable of. He was talking to his dad when he said it.
I don't remember that bit from The Office at all.
So, to end the episode, Clark walks onto the football field, and Lana's there. She's been fired from her waitress job. And it gets this weird what happened with, you know, the coach. He didn't even get to see his 200th win. It's like, but what does she think happened to the coach?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am already developing my fan theory that the U.S. government knows that kryptonite turns people into weird-powered mutant freaks, and it's just been kind of, like, suppressing all information and news from that, and just, like, you know, secretly just observing people and their long-term exposure to kryptonite so they can turn them into super weapons or something someday. Like, Amanda Waller is working as an analyst on this project right now.
That seems more dangerous than helpful. Like, wouldn't it be better to do controlled tests and have, like, control groups and things?
Robin, we have to beat the terrorists.
But, like...
9/11 was literally last month.
If you want to create superpowers in a way that you can, like, control and expect, wouldn't you want to understand how it creates superpowers by, like, doing tests?
Yeah, maybe, but, I mean, that implies a certain set of, like, logical principles that this kryptonite exposure mutation has to follow, which clearly isn't true. It's very, kind of has a juvenile sense of irony, I guess. That's the law it's following.
Okay. Got it.
Lana got fired from her job for being a bad waitress, and Clark says he's going to
quit. She was brand new!
I know, but she was impressively bad. She drops all those, like, dishes that one time.
But didn't someone bump into her?
Yes, but it doesn't matter. Those dishes come out of your salary.
Oh.
Yours specifically, Robin.
Oh, shoot. But I need my salary.
And Clark says to her, well, I mean, there was a certain cheerleader I was hoping to see more of anyway. And like, it's like, damn, Clark, you're going for it.
And then they make out for like 20 straight minutes.
No, Lana says, Clark says, yes, and they just want to scream. And Lana says, oh, me too. You want to scream? He's like, yeah. And they scream. And that's the end of the episode. It's a bit cute. Yeah, it's a good episode, all in all. You're the English major, so maybe you can speak more to this, but it seems like there's a lot of, like, father-parent things in this one. Like, Clark has problems with his dad, and Lex has problems with his dad, and Lana has problems with her aunt-mom, and the coach is, like, kind of a bad dad to the kids. It's like, it's a dad thing.
I thought you were gonna say, and the coach has problems with his dad, the principal. Principal Kwan, who doesn't understand him. But no, it definitely does seem like a thematic episode. A lot of parallel stories.
Yeah, but is it like... Is it just a bunch of similar stuff that's happening? Or does that like come together as something like deeper about dads?
Well... As an English major who did graduate more than 4 years ago and definitely remembers everything totally all about English, even though I didn't really take any English classes my last 2 years because I kind of front-loaded my credits, I would say it's all a coincidence. They had a couple of different writers just chucking ideas at the wall and they were like, this episode, all dads. What lessons? Dunno.
So, that's...
For real, though, I think it's about, like, impressing, like, you know, they're coming into their own, each of them, and impressing their dads, even if they react differently. Like, Lex impressed his dad, and his dad stormed out? Is that what happened? You cut out a bit when you were explaining it.
No, and then
Clark impressed his dad by not being on the field, and in return... His dad saved his life. Lana's dad died, but her aunt was mad that she wasn't a cheerleader anymore, so Lana went back. Wait, no, that's not good.
Yeah, no. The coach was the
Lana
only...
Lana tried to step out on her own and get a job as a waitress, but it turned out she was bad at that, so she went back to cheerleading.
Yeah, the coach was, like, a dad that tried to, like, force his legacy on his kids, and he ended up self-destructing... Okay.
Quite literally.
Yeah. Okay. We're cracking the code here.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like I said, I like the episode a lot. I thought definitely when I was younger, I remember this coach being kind of scary.
Yeah.
The fire and incinerating people, and I think like the his victims played the fear of getting immolated pretty well. The show's a little bit darker than you might think. It's a bit closer to, like, the Monster of the Week X-Files episodes in a lot of ways.
Was Watson okay at the end?
Yeah, he's fine.
Oh, okay.
Good. I mean, he's probably gonna have cheating on his record, but he's fine.
Well, if he throws a football good enough, who cares, right?
Exactly. Alright, unless you have anything else to add, I think that'll wrap up Smallville Season 1 Episode 3, Hothead.
Yeah, I think that's good for me. I will say I was right about what the power thing mm-hmm. was this episode, which gives me 2 for 2.
Mm. You didn't guess the electric scarecrow.
Well, I guess. I didn't guess that he became electric because of electrolytes.
See?
Yeah.
Robin, you do a lot of podcasts too. I didn't give you a chance on the first two episodes to talk about them. If people want to see them, you want to talk about them at all?
Yeah, I podcast for a podcasting network called Bitch Team Alpha. We do a lot of good stuff. Two of my favorite podcasts, one is Animorphous Discussion, which is a book-by-book Animorphs podcast. It's similar but different to this.
No, it's definitely better than this. I adore Animorphous Discussion. Everyone go listen to Animorphous Discussion.
I'm glad you like it. It's me and rotating two hosts, and I explain what happened in Book of Animorphs, and they are baffled by it, basically, is how that one goes.
Yeah, no, Smallville, or We Get It, He's Superman, is Animorphous Discussion with Smallville. That's absolutely what it is.
Yeah, but you put a lot more facts in here than I do.
Like, yes.
I considered saying, like, oh, this book was published in blank, and it was ghostwritten by blank. But instead, what I do is just be like, guess what kind of crazy shit happens in this book? All right, go. This book is called The Stranger. Figure out, tell me what it's going to be about. Okay, good. We also do one called Bitches and Liches, which is an actual play Blue Rose podcast, and that one might be my favorite one that we do. We have others too, but check us out on bitchteamalpha.com if you want to listen to those.
Absolutely do that. So until next time, stay normal.
Stay frosty. I don't remember what my sign-off is.
That's okay. You're fine. It's all fine. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Get It, He's Superman. I'd like to thank the Split Squad for letting us use their song Superman Says off the album Now Hear This as the intro and outro for this podcast. If you liked what we did, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter @GetSuperman or write to us at WGIHSCast@gmail.com. Thanks, friends, and stay super.